Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the 171st edition of the Feuerstein's Fire Internet Soccer Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. I'll give you an American perspective of our clubs, leagues, players, national team, and other fabulous moments. You can get your daily reading from me and other writers over at SoccerNewsDay.com. Ladies and gentlemen, chat room is open. Come on in. Discuss amongst yourselves if you like. Give me a question for me. I'll try to answer to the best of my abilities as possible. And boy, oh boy, oh boy, it is almost here. In 3 days, 3 to 4 days, the MLS Cup final will commence over at Sporting Park in Sporting. I probably was going to make a mess out of that one, so that's my bad. But it's going to be over in Kansas City, Missouri, or in Overland Park in Kansas. In Kansas City, Kansas, I should say. But still, though. But, you know, this is going to be an interesting situation, an interesting game. I think at the end of the day, I think we got the two right clubs that are going to be contesting this final. You know, you never doubt Jason Christ at all when it comes to Salt Lake, with RSL being a real tough out. You know, they're a tough, tough club, and once again, he's proven the world that you can change the parts, and you just got to give him credit for what he's been doing. Peter Vermees took him a couple of times, and of course, it took him to break a jinx against Dominic Kinnear and the Houston Dynamo to finally get to this point. And of course, Kansas City will be hosting the final over at Sporting Park this coming Saturday on ESPN at 4 o'clock Eastern. Quickly, I hope everyone had a great Thanksgiving. I hope you enjoyed your turkey and your stuffing and all the cravings that you need during this wonderful four-day vacation holiday break. Also would like to send my condolences to the families for the people who lost their lives in the crane accident down in Brazil for the World Cup stadium that got taken out by the crane. Thankfully, more were not hurt or killed. Unfortunately, two or three people lost their lives. We apologize. You know, feel bad. We want to send the families condolences, and hopefully, the Brazilian Football Federation can help out with the families that lost their loved ones on the construction site over in, I believe, it was in Sao Paulo. So let's hope that gets fixed up. We are going to preview the FIFA World Cup draw tonight. We got ourselves a good show. And, of course, don't forget, we're going to have on Mike Kuhn from Down the Byline blog on the Sporting Kansas City side of things. And, of course, Denzel Eslinger from RSL Perspectives, his blog on the RSL Real Salt Lake side of things. Today, if you're able to watch it live, if not, hopefully you go to YouTube and you can watch replays of the State of the League address by Don Garber. And, you know, you have to say, and hold on 1 second. Sorry about that. I didn't want you to hear me sneeze, but, you know, you have to say that Don Garber has done a very good job running Major League Soccer the way he has. And the truth of the matter is this. And I understand how everyone wants the league to fall in line with what FIFA does and the international calendar, how Europe does with the calendar as well, when and how they play matches. But the truth is this. You know, he is correct in one thing. And I think this does play a big part in how Major League Soccer does their scheduling. I mean, let's be truthful about it. Anyone in Europe ever come to New York City January, February? These are the very, very cold months. And forget about, you know, the winds and the chill factor, because if you go up to Canada, I don't know if you would like to see these games being played inside the Stade de l'Olympique in Montreal, just down the sidewalk that goes along Stade Saputo, Toronto's Sky Dome, maybe, instead of BMO Field. Or BC Place is BC Place. It's going to get covered up no matter what. But the point is that I don't think we're ready to make that move. And until they do find a solution, then, like I've said many, many times on certain mechanisms coming into MLS, if they make a solution and it is feasible, like I said before, I will not stand in the way. It's about caring on how these games are done, but at the same time, the point is this, is that if MLS is going to make this change, the NASL and the USL Pro League need to follow suit. They both need to follow suit, because if they don't follow suit, then what's going to happen? USL Pro is going to remain in the summer months? Are we going to still have this spring-fall schedule in the NASL, but we might have to reverse it? We'll see what happens. You know, I'm not trying to tell everyone it's not worth the time to change the schedule and when to play. But when you have people who are always, and I'll keep saying this till I'm blue in the face, there are people that continue to scream and shout, well, we got to have it the way that Europe does it. We got to have it done the way this, like, you know, the scheduling for this and for that. This is how they do it in England. This is how they do it in Germany. This is how they do it in Spain. This is how they do it in Italy. That's all fine and dandy, but, you know, when the original North American Soccer League played in the summer months, there was no comparisons back then. They played in the summertime. They went from a winter to from a spring to a fall schedule, and it was fine for them back in the day. Obviously, the technology for social media has changed everything a lot. But still, though, I feel that at the moment we're in a good place. I know it's difficult because, you know, you're going to have to play after the group stages of the World Cup, this 2014 MLS schedule. But, you know, that's the thing, though. You knew what the situation was. My main concern at the moment right now is U.S. Open Cup dates. That's my main concern, because I'm trying to find a way to see who can play what. And there's too many midweek games, so you don't know when the Open Cup games for MLS teams, or at least starting from round three all the way into the knockout brackets. Well, everything's a knockout game anyway, but you understand what I'm saying. From round three to the quarters, round three, round four, you don't know where to go. Quarters maybe, semifinals, you see a date. Final, you see a date. It's that middle ground. That's the situation we're at the moment, in my opinion. But let me just say that I'm very happy to hear that Don Garber is starting to become more transparent with how some of these rules and regulations are coming out. He said to a member of the Timbers Army, I believe, that the intent was not to deceive. And I think that's what MLS should be looking at right now. Because too many people are coming out with conspiracy theories about, well, Major League Soccer doesn't want to do this, Major League Soccer doesn't want to do that, the real reason is this, and the real reason is that. And you know what? I can understand why that's been going on. And let me just say that I don't blame you, because the only thing that I will admit that I'm getting frustrated sometimes with the league, is that maybe they're not explaining the situation properly. They're not explaining how they've come to these conclusions. And it's nice to see the league now, even though it takes a State of the League address to do it, but probably that's the first step in the right direction. Look, I'm a simple man. I want some simple clarification on how these things work. How do you bring in a player? How much do you pay him? How much can he be paid? What's the situation? You know, just so many frustrations about how you can or can't acquire a player, and he's got to go through some allocation process. And I think finally we're seeing some transparency from the league front office, and I think that's all we really want. Myself personally, I would just like to see the league and Don Garber just take it easy and just help us out with what the situation is. That's all we're really asking, aren't we? I think Don Garber has done a very good job discussing the situations of what's been going on in the league, answering the questions, not just supporters and bloggers, but also our media people like Ives Gallersep and Jack Bell, who's over there at the and, of course, with the Google Hangout Plus area. I think that was a great job from the commissioner explaining the situations and talking about how the league is progressing and becoming better while explaining the situations. I think that's a great move, and I just hope we continue this. But the one thing that I found to be a negative, and whether it's unintentional, maybe it's a jab, maybe it's something that maybe he didn't mean it in a certain way, but the one thing I do find a little disturbing, and first of all, there were New York Red Bull supporters in the seats over at the State of the League address. And, you know, hey, good for you guys for getting over there. Congratulations. I hope you enjoyed it. But the one thing that I'm a little perturbed about, and I'm not going to go completely bonkers on it, but you know what? It doesn't help the commissioner when he has to tell Red Bull fans, if you haven't been to Portland, go to Portland, fly over there, and see how they do it. How to support an MLS club, commissioner. And let me just say this to my friends in Portland. This is not me going after you guys. I'm not – you guys are basically innocent bystanders. This is not towards you. Don't worry about it. Sit down, relax, get a beer. Have a beer on me if you want. Go ahead. Take it easy. This is nothing on you guys. Commissioner Garber, New York Red Bull supporters can do the same thing like Portland can do, like D.C. can do, like Seattle can do, like New England can do, like Kansas City can do. What you just did was a slap in the face to a Red Bull supporter by telling them to go to Portland. They've already been to Portland. They know what to expect from the Timbers Army. That's not the case. The case is that you're acting a little bit ignorant there, and it's not going to help your cause when the supporters groups of the Empire Supporters Club, the Viking Army, and the Garden State supporters all believe you have an agenda against them. And the club. They believe you have an agenda. They believe you hate them, and this does not bode well if you're going to try to make some sort of peace, whether you know it or not. They think you hate them, and you hate the club. So all I can tell you, Commissioner Garber, and this is just advice, whether you know it or not, break bread. Make peace with the New York Red Bull supporters groups, because they are not happy with that comment. And believe me, I know. I read their Facebook pages. MLS Cup Final at Sporting Park, Kansas City, Kansas. This Saturday, 4 o'clock Eastern, 3 o'clock Central on ESPN. And on the sporting Kansas City side of things, my good buddy Mike Kuhn down the Byline blog. Mike Kuhn, this is it. You broke the jinx against Houston. You're back in the final for the third time, first time, I believe, hosting it. What's the feeling going on in the home state there, my friend?
I mean, overall, I think the feeling generally is more or less excitement. I mean, I've rarely seen this much excitement around the team as a whole. I mean, it's one of those things where there's actually a real genuine discussion of what could actually be on the front page of the sports section on Sunday if Sporting win the game, basically, because the same day, basically at the same time, Mizzou is playing in the SEC title game. So there's a genuine discussion of whether MU or Sporting could actually grace the front page of the sports section, depending on how results go. And I mean, a couple years ago, that was just wishful thinking to even be put in the same conversation as that. But it's the level of excitement, the level of interest is, as I don't think it's ever been higher.
Now, let me throw this at you. Is it at the same level as it was last year in the U.S. Open Cup final when they took on the Seattle Sounders, or is it higher than the Open Cup final from last year?
Oh, it's much higher. I mean, the Open Cup final got the team more media coverage, but the difference between the Open Cup and the league, it goes back to, and I think we've discussed this before, is just the mindset of American supporters of American sports fans, basically, when it comes to outside league competitions versus playoff championships. So while being in the Open Cup final was great and everything, in the minds of the average sports fan, it doesn't register a whole lot because it's not the championship like they're used to. So not only do you have the regular soccer fans excited about it, you also have just the general Joe public that's excited about it as well, because he's seen that they're in the final, they're in the championship game.
Absolutely. Now, obviously, you got a couple of Sporting Kansas City players that have won part of the MLS Best 11 positions. I know Matt Beisler and Graham Zuzzi, one for defense and one in the midfield, so congratulations to them. And, you know, I think that's a great achievement for these two players that are going to be on the I would have to assume they'll be on the World Cup U.S. national team roster for Brazil next summer.
No, absolutely. It's good. It's the second year in a row for both of them. But yeah, at this point, it'd take an injury or a shocking dip in form for either one, I think, to miss out on the 23, and for Beisler to not end up starting at the World Cup, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I'm going to ask you this question because who right now scares you on Real Salt Lake coming into this final? Because obviously, I'll admit it, when they let go certain players, I didn't think that they were going to have this type of success. I don't know if anyone did. But who right now scares you when Sporting is going to face Real Salt Lake in your home stadium this coming Saturday?
I mean, the probably the guy that scares me the most would probably be Morales more than anything. I mean, he's playing as good as he was pre-injury a couple of years ago. He's just a scary player to watch when he has the ball and your team's going against him. I mean, combine that with the fact that Salt Lake has developed the likes of Gill and Grabovoi is really starting to really found a home there. And I think you have to be more mindful of those guys. That gives Morales more time and more space to do his thing, because you can't be as focused on him as you possibly could in the past. So I think Morales is the one guy that really, really just I have him in my head as a guy that we got to really get shut down, basically.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, you got some really interesting players on the other side of things for Salt Lake. Obviously, Sandoval, your Donnie Alvarez, I also believe, is going to be a tough nut to crack at times. I mean, we already know about Nick Raimondo in goal for Salt Lake. They're always going to be a real, real test when it comes to the defense. And who else on defense scares you a bit?
Well, for defense, but also coming forward, is Schuler. I mean, he's really having a very good playoffs this year. I mean, he has, what, two goals so far? And he's an athletic center back that I think could cause us some problems, especially on defensive set pieces on our side.
Mm-hmm. And as I'm also taking a look at the Salt Lake roster, and I know you said it all, you know, Javier Morales does scare you, but boy, I'll tell you, I don't know how Toronto just let João Plata just let him go or just traded him to Salt Lake, because he's also been a big goal scorer as well. Alvaro Saborillo, I think he might be a game-time decision, but boy, you know, these two guys, the Costa Rican and Saborillo, the Ecuadorian and Plata, you know, these guys – they probably scare you too on the offensive side of the ball.
No, definitely. They're definitely guys that we're going to have to watch out for, basically, in regards to this, in regards to the game as a whole. You can't really pinpoint one thing. I mean, I've seen a lot of discussion today, especially with the Best 11 coming out, with regards to Salt Lake, and a lot of it is, this is a team-first mentality. And it really is in the aspect that they have the dangerous guys, but they have a combination of guys that are just under that can really hurt you if you focus solely on the dangerous guys. So, I mean, they have guys like Saborillo, they have Sandoval, they have Robbie Findlay, Luis Gil. They have guys that if you try to just shut down Morales or you try to just shut down Saborillo, they have other guys that are really going to come out and bite you for doing that, basically. So, I mean, they have a combination of talent that's really going to be tough for KC to beat.
Absolutely. Well, CUNY, then let me ask you this. What will be the game plan for Peter Vermes to bring over Sporting Kansas City's second MLS Cup championship?
Well, I think really it's going to be the same game plan he always uses. I mean, it's going to be a matter of forcing mistakes in Salt Lake's half of the field, forcing them back onto their heels with the high pressure, and really just trying to capitalize on any mistakes that they'll make on their end. I mean, that'll be the main part, which is why I think you'll see Dwyer start up top again in the center forward slot, just because of his work effort that he's put in, especially in the playoffs. He's the guy that's going to be responsible for trying to force those errors on Borchers and Schuler in the back and just try to force those turnovers. And it's just a matter of how Salt Lake adjusts to that. Take care of it well, take care of the ball, get rid of it, it's going to be a lot harder for KC to really put their game plan into play.
Wow. It's going to be exciting. I know I can't wait. Out of all the players, and I'm not going to say Dom Dwyer, because obviously we all know about Dom after everything he's been through, going down to playing for Orlando in the before they're going to come up in 2015, being a part of Major League Soccer, obviously. But out of all the players that you've seen play for this club, maybe not Zuzi, maybe not Beisler, but who do you think's been the biggest surprise of the season for this club right now? And if it is those guys, you can say it too.
I mean, I don't want to say it's a big surprise because he really came about last season, but I mean, as a whole, there's not, in my opinion, there's really not one guy who's really stepped up beyond what I'd expect, but my expectations, I guess, were a little lofty. But I mean, the one guy that I think's put in probably been the best all around all season, more so than I think a couple other guys, is Snobik. I mean, he gets, I think of anybody in the league, he probably gets some of the least accolades for his position. I mean, you have guys like Klute recently, who's really come about for Colorado, but Snobik gets forward. Snobik, I mean, you saw in the Eastern Conference semifinal against New England, he can finish the ball, and I just think he's come a very long way since he was let go by the Revolution, and he's really, I think he's one of those guys that could be an X factor, especially coming out of the back. If he can get the space like he did against New England, he's going to cause some trouble for Salt Lake.
Absolutely. Well, CUNY, where's the big hangout for this Friday's World Cup final draw over by you? You're going to have a barbecue, you're going to have a cookout, you're going to get a big screen and have the neighborhood watch, or everyone's heading over somewhere else?
I'm going to be at work, unfortunately. I'm going to be watching it on my computer. But the big watch party's here. Sporting's hosting one at the Members Club, and the KCAO chapter is going to hold it at their bar, Johnny's Tavern, downtown KC, basically. So those are where the two big parties in KC will be at. My party will be a party of one in my cubicle at work.
Just keep the volume level down. That's all I ask.
I will try. I can't don't quote me on that if we end up with the likes of Brazil, the Netherlands, and Italy in our group.
Oh, believe me, I won't be quoting everyone. I'll be quoting myself. take care, CUNY. Enjoy the game. And once again, next Tuesday, I need you, my friend. So I'll talk to you later, okay?
Sounds good. Talk to you then, Daniel.
All right. That's Mike Kuhn from Down the Byline blog on Sporting Kansas City and everything else that goes along with it. And, of course, don't forget the opponents for Sporting Kansas City will be making their way over at the Sporting Park this coming Saturday. Once again, Denzel Esslinger from RSL Perspectives joins me. And, you know, Denzel, we've talked about all the good things that Jason Kreis has done for this club ever since he was asked to, I guess you might say, a forced retirement. But still, though, as a head coach, he's had the time to mold this team to what he wanted since day one. And once again, we've always talked about the interchangeable parts that, amazingly, they have just done a magnificent job, along with Garth Lagerwey as general manager of RSL. I mean, how much more can we talk about this?
You know, it really is kind of amazing if you consider how many players from the 2009 MLS Cup are still here, still on the roster, still active. Ned Grabovoy, Matt Borgers, Nick Raimondo, Javier Morales, Kyle Beckerman, Tony Beltran. He didn't play, but he was with the team. Chris Wingert, and now Robbie Finley coming back. You know, how many teams can say they have that many veterans from an MLS Cup 4 years ago? It's a pretty rare thing. And you consider the players who have left over the last couple of years, it really is amazing how it plugs and plays. I was looking at the numbers. We have 27 guys who played MLS minutes this year on our roster. 26 of them played at least 160 minutes. I mean, that's a pretty big number, you know, and that's three goalkeepers, you know. So we had Raimondo, Jeff Antilla, and Josh Saunders, you know, with three different keepers starting for us, and they've all played at least or had at least three starts. So it's been a really interesting year, and, you know, I go back to something that Jason and Garth Lagerwey both have said over and over again. They bring in good people who happen to be good soccer players. You know, the mentality of before somebody gets drafted, before somebody gets signed, there's going to be a sit-down, face-to-face conversation with them, and then the decision will be made. And to me, that is so unusual in sports, period. You know, and part of it is the market. I get it. We're Salt Lake City. We can't have, you know, somebody who wants to be out partying all the time. You know, those things just don't fly well with our community here. It's a more conservative community. And so making sure we have good guys. But I think the bigger role for Jason is nobody in that locker room is going to disrupt the message that the team is a star. You know, today, MLS Best 11, not a single player on the list. We haven't won a single postseason award despite leading the table for, what, half the year? Go figure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, of course, you know, those guys, they deserve a ton of credit for getting this team going the way it really should be. And before I ask you about the players on Sporting Kansas City, I know you follow Twitter closely on what's going to happen with Jason Kreis. You know as well as I know and everyone else does, he'll be out of contract, I believe, at the end of this year, after the final this coming Saturday. There has been reports of nearly 100% going to become the next or the first head coach in the New York City FC's history, but Jason Kreis did play it down, saying he's agreed to nothing. But my question is this: how big of a hole would it be for Real Salt Lake not to keep Jason Kreis after the final this Saturday?
I think it would be a huge blow not to have Jason here. If you go back to the inception of this club, he was the first player signed. He was the first captain. He became the second coach. You know, he's the only guy I know in MLS who has his number retired. You know, you go to Rio Tinto Stadium and you look up above the owner's box, it says number 9, Jason Kreis. That's how important he is to this club and to this organization, but also to the fans. You know, I've watched fans on Facebook and on Twitter just begging him not to go. And I take Jason at his word when he says he hasn't made up his mind. It was interesting. I heard some comments from Brian Dunseth and some other folks today. He said, you know, how does Brian Strauss get this information? How does this come up, you know, the week of MLS Cup? We knew it would be a conversation at some point. But that quote, almost 100% done. Clearly somebody from New York City FC wanted their name mentioned at MLS Cup. They've got it. But by doing that, when Jason has made it perfectly clear for 4 months now, that he has not made a decision, he's not going to make an announcement until after the season. They hurt their own cause in trying to lure him away by making it such a distraction when he's trying to prepare his team for MLS Cup.
You know what this is, basically? And, you know, not to say that I am trying to blame it on a certain group, but once again, Manchester City, that is going to be 85% ownership of this new team in MLS, and, of course, the way they do things in England when it comes to the British press, when it comes to these managerial changes, I have to say it's typical English media. They're going to try and upset the situation because it's a big scoop and they want their names a part of it. This is how they work things in England, and they're going to try and throw this stuff here as well. So I will say this, good thing on Jason Kreis for putting his foot down.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and one of the things that I think is important, and Jason has said, the result from this match doesn't matter, win or lose. It's not going to be a deciding factor in his decision. I think something that is, and we still don't know from U.S. Soccer or MLS what the decision is Champions League. He's the only coach that's gotten, you know, within 10 minutes, 15 minutes of winning the CONCACAF Champions League. And that match, losing at home when all we needed was a draw, that that haunts the members of this staff and a lot of the players as well, you know, from the front office all the way down. And I know that's something Jason took personally, you know, and the woes in big games at home is something that he takes personally. I don't believe he's made up his mind, but I think there are so many things that are positives about him staying that I wouldn't want to have to make the decision, because clearly New York City FC is going to be the marquee team when they come in. They're going to have all the attention. You know, MLS has been panting and begging for a team to be in, quote, New York proper. You know, and so it's going to be the franchise. It's going, you think Red Bulls and LA and Seattle are on TV a lot and Portland? Just wait, because I imagine half of New York City FC's matches will be on national TV. So it's a big platform. It's a big check. You know, it's an open checkbook. It's an open roster that maybe he could build. But I doubt he'll ever have the relationship with a team president like he does with Bill Manning, with a GM like he does Garth Lagerwey, who have known each other for decades now. You know, so that's something that you can't replicate. And I don't know. I don't think Jason's leaving.
Well, we'll see what happens, obviously. And if it doesn't happen, then obviously, you know, all I can say is that we'll see what happens. But I'll go with you. I'll go along with you. I think you're right. I think Jason's probably got an opportunity here to remain with the club. Okay. Real Salt Lake taking on Sporting Kansas City. Obviously, we already talked about it. Jason Christ has done a fantastic job with this team and with these new players and how they've grown so quickly. Who on Sporting Kansas City right now worries you that Salt Lake might not get the championship?
You know, I think the wild card is Graham Zuzi. You know, Sporting Kansas City is as good as Zuzi is, and they're as bad as Zuzi is. You know, everybody else plays a role. There are guys like Colin and Fairhalber. You know, they can all have their moments, and they can all contribute. But the reality is, with Kamara gone, with Espinoza gone, that club has revolved. When Zuzi is on, they win. When Zuzi has an off night or is gone, they seem to struggle a bit. And so, you know, he's got to be the key to what makes that engine tick for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, there's a lot of U.S. internationals on this team, of course, Matt Beisler, Graham Zuzi. Could set pieces also be a problem for Salt Lake when they're trying to defend their goal?
If you had asked me this 2 months ago, I would have said yes, because there was a point in the season where RSL was awful on set pieces. The return of Chris Schuler at 6'4", being very physical, being able to jump, you know, and being as strong as he is, I think that changes that equation incredibly. You just have to look at the offensive set pieces where he's been able to contribute goals. The other thing I think people miss is when Sabarillo is playing, he is an incredibly good set-piece defender. The guy gets up, and actually sometimes I think he works harder on defensive set pieces than he does on offensive set pieces, you know, because he's always so double and triple marked on those. And so I'm not so much worried about the set pieces. What I'm worried about is a mistake being made in the midfield or a bad pass, the ball slick on an icy surface, and, you know, whether it's Dwyer or whether it's Saad or it doesn't matter, even Zuzi, you know, getting a chance and just firing a shot from distance, you know, 25, 30 yards out, and it, you know, taking a strain bounce or catching Raimondo out of position, that's what scares me. I when the two teams match up player for player at full strength, I think RSL is a better squad. You know, they beat us 2-1 without us mm-hmm. having Nick Raimondo, without us having Sabarillo, without us having Beckerman, without us having Beltran, and with, you know, Aaron Mond, you know, who is a perennial, you know, maybe the fifth string center back on our team. You know, so yeah, they got it, some strange officiating, They won 2-1. That's why they're hosting MLS Cup. Those points alone make that difference. But that's not going to be the case this time. You know, we're going to have Nick Raimondo in goal. We're going to have Chris Schuler healthy. Tony Beltran will be there. Kyle Beckerman will be there. And Saba Rio is going to be there. I think it's a very different situation. They don't have Kai Kamara anymore. And their offense has looked, I won't say anemic without him, but they certainly aren't as dangerous on that wide open style that they used to play. I think they've become a little bit more possession in the physical nature versus just the run at you that they were doing, you know, when Sapong was good and healthy and you had Kamara up there. I mean, they had guys that would just run at you constantly and apply all that pressure. Well, they still try to apply the high pressure, but it's not nearly as effective as it used to be, in my opinion.
All right. So what will be the game plan from Jason Kreis boarding Kansas City and win their second MLS Cup championship?
You know, we play the same style. It doesn't matter if we're at home or on the road, and I think we saw a great example of it in the second leg up at Portland. The most hostile environment there is. You know, an artificial surface, it has some strange bounces. We're going to see that on the grass with the cold conditions. We do what we do best, try to keep the ball on the ground, try to pass the ball and possess, and play really good defense. You know, and one of the things that I don't know if a lot of people noticed in that Portland game was the defensive work of guys like Robbie Finley, Javier Morales, Devin Sandoval. You know, the offensive players on our system play as much defense as anybody. You know, and then you add in the Luis Gills and the Ned Grabovoys, who can really put pressure on the ball in the midfield. This is going to be a midfield battle. You know, their forwards, you know, it doesn't matter who they play. It's going to be probably their 4-3-3. I like the matchup. I think it's going to be a very interesting match. And it could go extra time, you know. And if it goes extra time, it comes down to fitness. If it goes to PKs, it comes, you know, it goes beyond that. It comes to PKs. Jimmy Nielsen is good. Nick Raimondo is a monster on PKs. I hope it doesn't. I really think it's going to be a 2-1 RSL win in regulation time because I just don't know if they can stop the number of offensive weapons we've got. And the pressure is all on them. Nobody expected us to be there. Nobody expects us to win going to their place. You know, it's their crowd, their pressure. So our guys can just play soccer.
Absolutely. So, where will you be watching the World Cup draw this coming Friday?
I will be at work during the World Cup draw. You know, I actually had planned to try and make it out to Kansas City. I actually was going to go in 2009. I was on the pitch taking pictures for my blog. I was planning on doing that again, had gotten credentials, and just a number of things. Some of the issues, as you've seen online, with ticket distribution,
oh, yeah,
with the canceling of tickets. There's been so many things that just have really left a sour taste in the mouth of a lot of RSL fans. And the one thing I am is I am opinionated, and I'm not afraid to say it to anybody. And so, you know, I'd wavered whether or not I was going to go, and I had a situation come up this morning that we said, you're not going to be able to go even if you do want to. So I'll be at work for the draw, and then the match I'll probably go down to a local soccer pub that's been behind the team, you know, since day one, called the Republican. Just a little dive pub, but great people, and they all love footy.
Absolutely. Denzel, I can't wait to talk to you after this coming Saturday. We'll send you the email to come on over.
You've got to make a pick. I want to know who you're picking.
Oh, my God. Wow. This is going to be difficult for me because I think both sides are so good. Both sides are so strong. You know, I mean, look, I think we got the two best coaches right now. in the final with Vermees in Kansas City and, of course, with Jason Kreiss in Salt Lake. This is really going to be a tough one for me. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I think we're going to see the penalty kick shootout. And whoever wins that, I defer. I just do. Because both sides, it's going to be a big – it's going to be such a great final.
I think you're right. I think it's going to be a good match.
Yeah. I mean, listen, if it's going to be one slip, one mistake, then obviously it could go to either side. But if they're going to hold off and, you know, get – I think they're both – this is how I think it's going to be. Both sides will get their chances. I think Raimondo and Nielsen are going to perform fantastically in regulation and in extra time. It's going to be that one bad mistake that will give either side the title. Other than that, penalties, and whoever wins that, I'm not saying it, you know, whoever does it, because it's going to be that good.
Okay, I'll let you off the hook.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Denzel, I'll talk to you next week as well. Good luck on Saturday, and I'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Okay,
and that's Denzel Eschlinger over at RSL Perspectives as we're talking the final. That's my honest opinion, folks. This is going to be a hell of a final. I think we have the two best coaches, the two best teams in the league, that are right now fighting for that MLS Cup championship. I cannot wait. It's going to be exciting. We're going to finish it off the show with the preview of the FIFA World Cup group draw, which will be down in Brazil this coming Friday at 11:30 a.m. Eastern, 8:30 a.m. in the morning in the Pacific. And here are the pots. You probably already know what it is. Pot one is the seeded teams once again: Brazil, Spain, Germany, Argentina, Colombia, Belgium, Uruguay, and Switzerland. Pot two will have the five African countries in Cameroon, Nigeria, Ivory Coast, Ghana, Algeria, and then, of course, the two remaining South American teams in Chile and Ecuador. And pot X, we'll get to that in a minute. Pot three is Asia and CONCACAF, Australia, Iran, Japan, South Korea, Mexico, Honduras, Costa Rica, and the United States, and the rest of Europe is in pot four: Greece, Croatia, Portugal, Netherlands, Bosnia-Herzegovina, France, Italy, England, and Russia. Yes, eight teams in pot one, seven teams in pot two, eight teams in pot three, nine teams in pot four, because France, being the lowest-ranked team in the UEFA zone of FIFA, they probably should have been in pot two with Africa and CONMEBOL South America. But because of this change, what they're going to do is they will draw one of the nine balls in pot four in UEFA, move it to pot two, technically into pot X. Meaning, everything is said and done in pot two with the African countries, then they will draw the remaining two South American sides and then into pot X, whoever gets picked out of the UEFA pot in pot four. Once again, FIFA has done something wrong. And I understand it's their tournament. But the point is, why should France get a pass? Let's just say, for the hell of it, maybe Russia gets drawn into pot X to join the rest of the African and South American teams. I know they want an interesting World Cup draw. I know that they want to show that their way is the right way, but you know what? No matter how much they think the right way is, it just messes everything up. And once again, we don't know where the U.S. is going to get drawn. we don't know which seeded team, and at the same time, which African side or South American side they're going to play, either the four seeded teams from South America like Brazil and Argentina and Uruguay and Colombia. Who will be joining them either from Cameroon, Nigeria, Ivory Coast, Ghana, or Algeria? And then, of course, what's going to happen from pot four? Because right now, we can't really decide what's going to happen. At the moment, nine teams, the rest of Europe, one will be drawn out and sent to pot two or in the pot X. Once again, FIFA has really bamboozled this situation. But let me say this, though. Let me just say this. I still think it's going to be interesting. I still think it's going to be a hell of a draw, and I still think we're going to get multiple groups of deaths. It all depends on who gets drawn in the top spot in each group. That's going to be the challenge first. And as you look at the seeded teams in pot one, who do you want to avoid? Obviously, the host country in Brazil. Because that could be a big, big group of death right there. Spain, definitely a big problem there. Very, very tough. Very powerful. Back-to-back UEFA Cup champions in the last two tournaments, winning their first World Cup in South Africa. Germany, you know, Joachim Löw has always done a great job ever since Jurgen Klinsmann left the German national team. Very, very strong team. We know how the Germans are. You know, they're also going to be a big-time team as well. They're going to be on South American soil. They know how to play at home. And I understand it's in Brazil, but still, South American soil doubles the danger factor when you have teams like a Brazil, an Argentina, a Colombia, and an Uruguay. Where could be the drawbacks in the seeded pot? Out of the other four, with Colombia, Belgium, Uruguay, and Switzerland, who could be the ones that could make a mistake? Many have said the Swiss, and I will still stand by the Swiss. That could be a drawback side that probably did not deserve to be seeded. Colombia, while they have great players and improving players, Falcao no doubt will be on this 23-man squad for Colombia. Who knows if they might take a step back, depending on who they get. And maybe they'll assume they can rise above the situation. Uruguay is also tough. Do not underestimate them at all. Edison Cavani over at Paris Saint-Germain, he'll be a part of that great Uruguayan team along with Luis Suarez. Belgium, for everything they've done so far, they're riding the big emotion with their people. They could take a step back, you never know, because this is the first time I think they've been seeded. And I just can't see Belgium, because they are going to face a powerhouse team in their brothers in the seeded pot, which is pot one. So at the moment, for the U.S. in pot three, you hope to get drawn with Switzerland, because at the moment they're the de facto problem child, you might say. They might not get through. So right now the Swiss group is the one the USA would like to get. If not, all hands on deck. Let the draw happen. We'll see what the situation will be. If you're coming into pot two, let's ignore the UEFA draw from pot X that will join pot two. Ivory Coast, Nigeria, Cameroon, Ghana, Algeria. Obviously, you would think Algeria would be a de facto seed as well. If the U.S. gets drawn with Switzerland, you're hoping for either Algeria or Chile or Ecuador, because as good as Chile has been so far in South American qualifying, as well as Ecuador has, those are the three right now that I think are the top opponents for the U.S. to be drawn with. And then we go to the UEFA pot. Once again, 9 teams in pot 4, which is the rest of Europe. Who should we face? Who should we avoid if you are the U.S.? I still feel the 2 or 3 teams, maybe 3, but I feel that the 2 teams that they can take on from the European pot, if they do not get drawn into pot 2 or into the pot X special, I would have to go with either England or Bosnia-Herzegovina. Some are saying Greece could be that team that the U.S. can have a good opportunity to defeat. But then again, to me, that's a wild card. Croatia maybe could be a good pickup for the U.S. to face against from pot 4. True, but once again, that could also be pot luck for or against, we don't know. Italy, very tough. France has a good young team right now. I wouldn't want to play them. Portugal, Cristiano Ronaldo, you know, that's a tall order to task. You know, that's a very tall task if you're going to order that matchup, because I think Portugal will remember. Not many. I don't think anyone is from back in 2002 when the U.S. defeated Portugal over in South Korea. But believe me, the Portuguese fans want revenge, and maybe that would not be a good matchup for them. The Dutch, I think they could be a very solid matchup against the U.S., and they could probably handle the U.S. very well and defeating the guys. Russia, of course, will be the hosts for 2018, but Russia, that could also be a big mystery pick for the U.S. as well if they get drawn in their group, because they could be really, really good, or they could be very complacent. And if the U.S. can take advantage of Russia, maybe there's a situation there. We'll have to wait and see. The wild cards for me against the U.S., and I'm being honest here, would be the Greeks, the Russians, and maybe the Croatians. We'll have to wait and see. But once again, you don't know what's going to happen. Thankfully, though, we don't know what's going to happen with Mexico, with Honduras or Costa Rica, Australia, Iran, Japan, or South Korea. But one thing is for sure, everyone, this is going to be a very, very interesting World Cup final group draw. We could have more than 2 groups of deaths. Not exaggerating here. This is going to be a big, big test. So once again, after everything's been said and done, my wish list for the USA to be drawn in a group from pot 1, Switzerland, pot 2, either Algeria, Chile, or Ecuador. Of course, pot 3 will be the United States. Out of pot 4, either England, Bosnia-Herzegovina, wild card pick, Croatia. That's my hope for the USA being drawn. This Friday, after ESPN2 ends the broadcast, join me and my guests, Carter Krishnayer, Kevin Egan, Juan Arango, Colin Udo, Jonathan Johnson, and Christopher Atkins, as we will review the World Cup draw this Friday, 1:30 p.m. Eastern, 10:30 a.m. Pacific. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you for listening to tonight's show. And as always, please enjoy your football. Thank you. Have a good night. Join me this Friday, 1:30 p.m. Eastern, 10:30 a.m. Pacific, to review the 2014 FIFA World Cup draw in Brazil. Good night, everybody.